Okay, let's get started. We are at the top of the hour, so I see a few people coming in. And please have a seat and find yourself comfortable. Let me start by introducing myself. My name is Anders Vognholt, and I work as a program manager on what we call the Customer Architecture and Technology team, which is part of the Windows Server and System Center product division. And today, with me, I have John.
Hello, thank you, Anders. My name is John Joiner. I'm a Microsoft MVP for System Center, Cloud and Data Center Management. I work for ClearPoint Technology, which is a provider of hosted and managed services using System Center. I'm also a co-author of the System Center Unleashed series, the big, heavy books.
Okay, thank you. So today, I assume many of you went to the keynote, and Brad was explaining a lot of, maybe to some of you, new terms, to many of you, terms that you've heard before. But again, as the previous years, the word cloud came up over and over and over. Brad talked about how we could make consistency between these clouds, how you can connect to different clouds using System Center and Windows Server technologies. And that is exactly what we want to do in this session today, is to drill a little deeper and kind of go into some of the areas where we talk about exactly how we can connect to these clouds. But in the beginning, we also want to talk a little bit about what are these different clouds that everybody's talking to. So we want to set the scene first with that, and then go into how can we connect and how can we work with these different clouds that we're all talking about. So that's going to be the topic of today. Because many of these functionalities comes built into Virtual Machine Manager and App Controller, so that's kind of how we drive the cloud experience using those two products. There are going to be many other sessions out there that would explain how you can use other System Center products by driving your private or your cloud or private and public cloud experience. Today, we're going to focus on these two components. And we might have a little sneak you into other components as well, but this is where we are going to focus on. So to spend a little more time on cloud, and not so it's just our interpretation of what is cloud, there are some general characteristics that are defined by in IST, defined as Cloud Essentials. And this is the standard organization that are coming up with these definitions of when you create clouds as a general thing, what should those contain? And there are five characteristics for this. And the first one is what we call on-demand service. Brad also mentioned a little bit about this in his session, where he talked about this self-service capability, where we want to be able to self-service ourselves when we want and where we want. And there are some of the other capabilities that we see up here that would also drive the self-service experience. So here, I really want to be able to log into a console, and I want to perform whatever action I want to carry out in the service that I'm connecting to. And via that, sort this out by self-service so I don't have to call a service desk to carry out simple functions that I want to do in the cloud that I've been given access to. Now, remember, when we talk cloud, it could be any cloud. So that's why I'm not saying virtual machines or anything like that. It could be email. It could be financial systems. It could be anything like that. So we'd be talking much broader terms here. So the other thing we have, mostly actually in order to enable self-service, is that we need broad network access to these clouds. So if I want to transfer some data from on-premise to a cloud out there or from one point to another cloud, I need broad access connection in order to do that. So I needed to both access the self-service portal, but also if I want to move data between different clouds, I need a good thick pipe of network connection. It doesn't have to be the internet. It could be the internet, but it could be any sort of network connection you have there, as long as it's big and it's fast. Then the next thing we have here is what we refer to as resource pooling. And this is something we also work a lot with in the System Center components. And Brad also mentioned this, that resource pooling is a standardized way of having resources that you constrain inside a pool. So that could be storage. It could be networking. So storage could be a bunch of LANs that I put in here for resources. For networking, it would be a bunch of IP addresses. And for compute, it could be a bunch of physical servers that I wanted to work with. But think about it as a standardized way of representing resources into a cloud. So rapid electricity, what we mean by this is that when you connect to cloud, I can have one demand in the beginning of the month. I could have another demand at the end of the month. Or, for instance, I think there's a lot of shows going on here in Las Vegas, and you have all these different shows going on with One Republic and Justin Bieber and whatever they call these famous artists these days. I don't know, but I know that these guys are very popular. So here they really have an infrastructure and a load to handle all these ticket ordering systems. But where I come from in Europe, we don't have that load. So if those One Republic and Justin Bieber came to Copenhagen at the same time, that the equivalent to Ticketmaster would really have to double or triple their infrastructure for a very, very limited time. That could be a few hours before those tickets are sold out. That's the same thing here. We want to say that I can triple my infrastructure with the resources that I need just to take in a load of One Republic and just the Beaver being in town for a day. And then when they walk out or they go back home, I can scale that down so only pay for the resources when I need them. And of course, in order to support that, we need measured service. So of course, I would pay more to my client provider when these two artists are in town than if I'm just running with normal performers on a given month or a given week. So that's why, and that's the cool thing about cloud, is that I only pay for what I use when I need it. And that's a very important characteristic as well. If we look at this from a little different angle, and Brad also had focus on this in his keynote, what we need to remember is that one of the very important reasons why IT is there is because we can help the business do a better job. And because of that, we have business on the one side and we have IT on the other side. And just to drill a little deeper into some of the characteristics that we are seeing between these two worlds, we have self-service again, where we want to expose that self-service to the business. So in this case, the business could be more than just the app owner that Brad talked about. That could also be whatever owner that just needs to have a bigger mailbox or an owner that needs to have a SharePoint site that doesn't need to be an app owner. So think a little broader terms in many cases of what we really see as being self-service and who uses those self-service. The other thing that I really paid attention to that Brad was also pointing to was automation. If you want to drive cloud characteristics and you want to drive an efficient cloud, automation becomes the key thing. So automated provisioning is like whenever I want to order a certain function from the cloud that I'm subscribed to, I want to have very rapidly provisioned. And the only way I can achieve that is by automating it. So by automation, I get that I can do it very fast. Also, the chance that I would do an error when I automate it is a lot less than if I was just sitting and had a people to do this manually. So that's another benefit we get from that. Plus, we actually document what we're doing. So when I'm automated my provisioning, I can automatically feed my billing system with that data, which would be a lot harder if I was doing this manually. Pool resources, we've already talked about that, but in this case here, it's really about how we can drive standardization. Brad didn't mention it that much, but at least one of my points here with these cloud essentials is that if you have not standardized what you have in your infrastructure, the job of doing automation becomes very, very hard. And when we look at these pool resources, that could be having a standardized way for how I can manage my LUNs and connect to my SANs. I know John is going to talk a little bit about that, but it could also be how do I automate the way that I handle my IP addresses or extend an exchange mailbox because a user wants more space. And that we need to drive those by using standardization. And we also talk, he referred to extreme automation, or also referred to that as having extreme standardization. The more you standardize, it's the easier it's going to be to automate on top of that. And that's when we have, but it's not only when we provision that we automate, it's also when we do operations or we do ongoing maintenance on these systems, we need to automate that as well. So the cool thing about self-service is that I'm giving power out to the user. But the one thing that I still want to maintain control, so the user can certainly go out and provision new users or provision new virtual machines or provision new exchange users or whatever the service they are having. But what I want to do as a provider is that I want to maintain control. And the way I can do that is by having quota-based allocations. So I say, hey, customer one, the two of us, we have a contract and you are signing up for 20 machines of one type, then I want to be able to ensure that you do not go up to 21 or 25 or 100 when we have this agreement. And that's why we want to enforce the quota-based allocation. And of course, on the back end, we want to make sure that we can optimize the resources that we use on the back end. So we are making maximum use of the pool resources we have further up. Thank you. So that means that I can then make maximum utilization of my resources, referring back to my pool resources. And if I can optimize that, I can also drive a lower cost of ownership inside my data center. But to drive all these goes back to what we refer to as chargeback, because once I have all these customers that are running around and they are consuming a service that I provide to them, we want to make sure that they actually pay for what they're using, and therefore chargeback becomes a very important piece as well in this cloud discussions that everybody's talking about. So let's be a little bit more specific about cloud. So we look at two types in many conversations when they start. Many people will refer to two types of cloud. They will refer to what they call a private cloud, which is, in most cases, is what you have on-premise or what you have in a data center. So that could be a service provider, or that could be what I have in my own data center. So we refer to that as private clouds. Then we have public clouds. And in this case, this is for Microsoft, that is Windows Azure. And here you see some of the services that we can drive on top of them. So many of you probably already have Link running, Exchange running, SharePoint, SQL, and other Microsoft services running on-premise. Some of you might be split between the two worlds. So some of you might already be on Office 365 for some uses, but you're still using CRM on-premise. So this is how we refer to that you can be in multiple clouds at the same time consuming services that are provided either place. But what is important here is that we want to have some common technologies that we use to drive these clouds. And here we have identity, we have virtualization, management, and deployment are things that we want to use. But to make this very efficient, we want to use those same common technologies in both places without having to think too much about where do I do this operation. I'd rather want to think about the operations that I want to perform, and then the common technology should figure out the rest for me. So again, we have the two consumers that we talked about. We have the two personas, that's what we refer to. So we have the service consumer or the application owner in many scenarios. And this persona has certain things that they want to drive. So they have empowerment and agility. That goes back to if I know that OneRepublic or Justin Bieber is coming to town, I want to make sure that I click that button at the right point in time and I get the resources that I need fast and in time so I can actually go in and raise my infrastructure to the right level. And the way I can do that is by logging into a self-service portal where I can say, I currently have 10, I want to expand that to 30 instances of capacity running inside my cloud. And then, of course, application visibility and control. That was the example we saw that when Brad was showing that we could actually do deep insight management with GSM, global service monitoring, but also that we could see what was going on with the code and take some of that and put it into Visual Studio. And of course, simplicity. And this is really an important point for what we're going to talk about today, is that I want simplicity in terms of if I go from one cloud or I go from one place to another place, I want to have a cohesive experience across these two worlds. That is exactly also what Brad was pointing to. Give me a cohesive and similar experience when I go from one place to another place. I shouldn't think about that too much. Then we have the other guy here calling the service provider, and this guy is the one that wants to do resource pooling. He doesn't want to call the SAN administrator or the networking guy every time he's provisioning a new virtual machine to say, could you give me another LUN? Could you give me another IP? We want to pull that up and saying, I'm going to give you 20 LUNs at the time, or I'm going to give you 100 IP addresses at the time, and then go consume those and get back to me when you get to a low number of LUNs or IP addresses, and then I'm ready to give you more resources. But I'm pooling it. I'm standardizing the way that I utilize those resources. Delegation and control goes right back to what have we agreed upon. I want to give the empowerment and the agility to the service consumer, but I want to control that they are not over consuming, and I can do that by having delegation and control, which we will get back to. And then, of course, again, the flexibility and electricity, scaling up and scaling down, but let the application owner control it on the front end, but I have a back-end infrastructure that can actually handle that and automate how we scale these things up and down. And of course, as always, cost efficiency is also very important, that we run it at a minimum cost. Of course, we have an agreement between these two personas, and that's what you call a service agreement or a service level agreement, where we agreed upon the terms that I can use these services that the cloud provides. So if you look at it from, we slice the data center a little bit to see what, how is it that we're driving these things. We have the self-service that the app owner is working in. And then we have App Controller where they can go in and they can work with the things that we're exposing to them based on the role that we have given them. Then what we can do via the self-service is that we can use back-end processes or IT processes such as ITIL or MOF, where we can drive some of these behaviors that I'm ordering from the self-service, for instance, to see if I want certain things that I'm ordering inside this to be approved first, or there are certain risks that needs to be considered before we do this, then we can do that on the back end. As a second part of that, we can then configure and deploy whatever was ordered inside the self-service portal and put that into the infrastructure. And once that has been provisioned in there, what we can then do is we can start monitoring and operate it and patch it and back it up and so on and so on. And that is, of course, what the data center admin is providing. And then we have the app owner that is consuming these services. So that hopefully gave you an idea of just setting the scenes for what do we mean when we say cloud. What are the characteristics of a cloud? And then also, as the first thing, what are the different clouds that we can work with? But with that, I want to give it over to John to explain some of the private cloud characteristics.
Thank you, Anders. Shifting now from the personas, we're going to now talk about hardware and real stuff that we call the fabric. This is a build slide. We're going to focus on it for a moment, and we're starting out with an enterprise or an organization that is beginning its cloud journey. This is where they are today, and they have two data centers, a large data center and a smaller one. The smaller data center might perhaps be a DR site. And within these data centers, they have hosts represented by the computer type objects. Some of them are blue, some are black, perhaps representing different kinds of hypervisors. And then at the bottom portion of each data center, we have represented storage in green and in blue, perhaps representing SANs, iSCSI, Fibre Channel, other different mechanisms for storage. So, and then within these two data centers, we have two environments. We have a production environment and a development environment. I think when I advance now, you can see that within the large data center, some of the resources are production, some of them are development. So this represents a fairly typical large enterprise today. So step one, take a look at what you've got. Step two, decide which of your resources can be pooled and which of your resources need to be dedicated. We're going to talk a lot about quota management. And when you pool your resources, quotas are king. If you have a customer, if you have an environment where there cannot be quotas, where you want to give a particular application 100% of the hardware and let the app peg out, then that is a case to assign dedicated resources that will not be subject to quotas. So the biggest task, perhaps one of the biggest tasks in this transformation to the private cloud paradigm, is taking the diverse elements, the different kinds of hardware, the different kinds of storage, networking, and compute resources, and standardizing them. Brad talked a lot about providing a consistent experience. And so a key challenge, a key task for the service provider is taking their fabric and making it a standardized environment so that we can apply automation to it. Basically what you're doing is you're taking, you're homogenizing diverse elements into common objects. Once we have taken the raw guts of our data centers and we've created logical models, we can now begin this abstraction process. And we add to the slide two clouds. So cloud is an administrative entity that's used for management, chargeback, delegation. Since we have two environments, this a logical way for this customer to proceed was to create two clouds. So now we have created the data center that we can manage effectively. We have created these administrative entities called clouds. Now we're going to put the people in there. The people and the little sub-clouds inside the large clouds are illustrating a key feature in System Center VMM, which is the ability to dedicate capacity to individuals that have various roles, delegated administrators and self-service users. So in this example, in the development cloud, there's one delegated administrator, and he has one cloud. In the production cloud, there's actually two clouds, and each cloud has its own set of administrators. You know, perhaps one is the messaging and one is the database, for example, and so different teams. And now finally, the icing on the cake, let's do some work. Let's deploy workloads. So standardized services represents workloads, applications that you need to run your business. And a very simple example standardized workload is deploy a new VM. So your end user should not have to worry about any of the complexities of the fabric and the abstraction when they deploy a new VM. They should have a consistent experience when deploying that VM, regardless of where it's going, what cloud it's going in, and what the physical components are representing that cloud.
And a self-service experience.
And the self-service experience. Yeah. Let's focus a little bit more on those raw components of our cloud that we need to abstract into logical, manageable, common entities. We have our compute, our storage, and our networking. Your compute resource is being abstracted away from the concept of a physical number of servers from a particular vendor with a particular physical constraints, and we're just worried now about compute resources because we've further abstracted our storage and our networking, so we can focus on capacity, raw processing capacity, and we can purchase server-type hardware that is optimized for the compute role, rather than having to also perform extremely well in the storage and networking roles because those are taken care of by the Cloud OS. Storage, probably one of the biggest, you know, along with networking, every customer, every environment is going to have a different mix of storage resources, a different mix of networking resources. Remember, Brad in the keynote this morning said a key concept in Cloud OS is that we are moving everything to be driven by software, everything that can be. So we're going to take, for example, in storage spaces, we're going to take the function of RAID away from the hardware controller and bring it into the Windows OS. The storage spaces are going to take care of the RAID. In the case of networking, there was a great example in the keynote where where a virtual machine was moved from one site to another and it preserved the same address, which was actually a duplicate address at both locations, and there was no problem. So in order to do that, we have to abstract the network as well. And clustering is in this slide because we still need clusters. Those of you familiar with Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V, you know, there is a very nice live migration feature that doesn't require clustering. But in the service provider world, when we want to provide adaptive, rapidly agile storage, we're going to need clustering. So Windows failover clustering is part of the solution still. For the rest of the presentation, we're going to continue to follow this persona paradigm. And my company, ClearPoint, is going to play the role of a hoster that is selling fabric capacity to consumers around the world over the internet. Anders is going to play the part of the Contoso company, which has decided that they're going to buy some extra virtual machine capacity at my hosting facility.
Justin Bieber coming to town.
We better be prepared. So we're going to step through the ways into this solution. So Virtual Machine Manager, we're going to take a close look at it in a moment. In the demo, Virtual Machine Manager is our virtualization manager. And as our task as the service provider, the first thing we did, remember at the base of our slide, we took a look at what we had. And we made it ready to consume by defining the standardized resources and doing the work that I showed you in the previous slide. Then in the right-hand corner, we are providing access to the customer to these resources. And we're going to see Anders use App Controller, which is going to reach out over the internet using Service Provider Foundation to provide that access. And if there's time at the end of the session, we'll show another way to provide that access, which is with Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. So Anders, playing the part of the Contoso company, he's going to later show a demo live from his App Controller instance. And from that App Controller instance, he's going to be looking at clouds in three places. He's going to be looking at his Azure subscription, He's going to be looking at his local instance of Virtual Machine Manager, his local virtualization plant. He has pretty much complete control over those two environments, but he's also going to have this extra capacity in the hoster environment, which is the ClearPoint environment. And again, in, later in the demo, Anders is going to actually launch VM creation into the other cloud, and he's going to be able to see the machines in App Controller from all three clouds. Again, I mentioned if there's time, we'll show that Windows Azure Services for Windows Server is another way to provide access to the self-service VM creation solution. And also, as we mentioned, Anders is going to show Chargeback, which is part of the service manager piece of System Center.
I mean, one thing just quickly to add here is also to keep in mind that many of you might sit in here and say, hey, I'm not a service provider. What does this scenario have to do with me? We're just taking it to the outer extreme where we can say I'm a service provider, I'm subscribing to resources, but this could be a big organization saying, hey, I'm marketing or I'm finance, so don't think about you can only do this if you are a hoster and you have a customers that are coming in to subscribe to that. This could also very easily be inside your own division or your own company itself. We're just taking it to the outer world to show the different clouds. In the
Thank you for pointing that out, Anders, and I'm sorry if I didn't start. We sort of transitioned right into to my portion, but that is a key point. Why are we spending this time telling you guys not who are not necessarily hosters how to become a hoster? And this is a larger discussion, maybe out of scope for this technical presentation, but there are great efficiencies to be gained by the medium and large enterprise running its own internal IT shop as if they were a hoster, and then providing to the leaders of their business units, treating them as tenants of the infrastructure. Great. We're going to go into the demo now and take a quick look at Virtual Machine Manager. Quickly, I wanted to start out, in addition to the System Center books that I've written, I also write a weekly column for Tech Republic. And I'm in the middle of a four-part series. And if you go to Tech Republic, just search for my name or search for App Controller, you'll see the three articles that I've written already, and the fourth article is going to be coming out this week. So everything that I'm covering, all the technicals that I'll be covering in terms of Service Provider Foundation, if you go to my articles here at Tech Republic, at the bottom of each article, there's a, for more information. You know, so all the detailed checklist at TechNet to do all of the things that we'll be showing you. An easy way for you to find those might be to follow up on my article series at Tech Republic. The title of this session was like Getting Started with Virtual Machine Manager. I would like to see a show of hands, how many people have no familiarity with Virtual Machine Manager? How many people consider themselves that they know Virtual Machine Manager pretty good? Okay, most people know it pretty good, and there's a few newbies. Well, for those of you that know Virtual Machine Manager very good, you may see a few new things with this. You know, we're going to be looking at Virtual Machine Manager 2012 Service Pack 1. There's some new features in the Service Pack 1. And we're going to be concentrating on the self-service pieces that fit into VMM. We're looking at the VMM console, our virtualization manager, and we're looking at the fabric pane, concentrating first on taking the data center fabric and carving it up and making it available and ready for our tenants. There are the three core components of our fabric, just the same ones from Brad's presentation, the same one from our slide that had the three pillars plus clustering. The core, the core building blocks of our data center are our compute nodes, which are our servers, our networking, and our storage. And this particular cloud has three hosts that are hosting 26 virtual machines. We can see that the SCVMM is handily let us know that there's a total of 40 physical cores across our cloud, and we're using 55 of those. So it's about a 1.2 oversubscription. That means we still have some extra excess capacity, actually, because Hyper-V, you want to target 1.5 to 2 oversubscription. You should have no problem with performance. And in this particular cloud, we have three hosts that are organized into a cluster. Networking in SCVMM is where the work is done to create the logical networks that allow us to transcend individual physical VLANs in data centers and start to think about logical networks that span our enterprise. To show you, I wanted to do a drill down into just one of these features. For example, I'm going to show you here in the native port profiles. Windows Server 2012 includes NIC teaming of network cards. Those of you that have tried to do this in the past in high availability Hyper-V environments, There may have been some challenges because the implementation of NIC teaming was very vendor-specific to the hardware of the NIC. So again, Microsoft's theme for the new generation of software is we're going to move the computing task into Windows, and that includes the NIC teaming task. So it's actually a good practice with Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V to create your NIC teams using the Windows Server NIC teaming. So we need to tell SCVMM that there is a port type that of NIC teaming that's going to use the LACP teaming mode, which is an industry standard way for NICs in a team to talk to one another. So we're creating the port profile, and then when we create the logical switch, the logical switch is going to specifically include the team uplink mode. You can see that there's a team and a no team mode. So this was just a slight drill down into this feature to show how you start to let SCVMM know about the hardware characteristics of your fabric.
And that's also how you support all the Windows Server features that we're implementing. Windows Server 2012 is exactly what is also done there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then the last portion of the fabric that's controlled in here, the main portion, is the storage. This is really cool. I'm going to say add a new storage device. It's going to prompt me what kind of storage device, and I can tell it one of several categories. The easiest one for you, the most bang for the buck, is going to be to use Windows Server 2012 file servers using the SMB 3.0 protocol. Access your virtual machines over the network with file shares. That's going to be the leading solution with an all Windows Server 2012 environment. But there's also the option to use other storage vendor products. For example, most SANs and better NAS devices from most of the leading vendors that have been released in the last couple of years natively support a protocol called SMI-S, or they have firmware updates that are recently available that will add SMI-S. And that's SMI-S is a way for, it's a standardized way to talk to a storage provider and say, how much storage do you have? I need some. Here, give me some. And to do that over a web service. That's what SMI-S is. So SCVMM can dynamically provision storage in the new model and also can interoperate with the hardware that you have in your data centers today, which may use the SMI-S protocol. And so I dove into SCVMM and I showed you how we take the compute, the network, and the storage raw elements, how we abstract them and create manageable entities. So now we're talking about the cloud abstraction. Now we're going to move to a different aspect of our cloud model, which is the delegated capacity. Here's where I'm going to set up my cloud resources to be ready for Anders to come in over the internet and subscribe to them and consume them. On the left slide, in this slide, which is discussing the role-based access in SCVMM, we have the administrator. This is my employee. This is the guy who works for the hoster. So this individual is not necessarily concerned with individual virtual machines spinning up. He or she is concerned with the health of the fabric. To the right, we have in the black box, this is the customer. This is the consumer. The senior member, the point person on a customer team has the persona of the delegated administrator. In an enterprise where you're treating these as business units, this might be the IT department of a business unit would be the delegated administrator. There's an option to create a read-only administrator if that's necessary in your environment. But the point of all this, really the icing, is the self-service user and his or her ability to come in and quickly and easily, using self-service technologies, get their work done instead of it taking weeks or months to provision a virtual machine, letting it happen in minutes. Instead of having to get the approval of bosses and committees, the developer or the application owner himself or herself makes the decision to make this happen and almost instantly realizes it. So that when we talk about paradigm shift, that's a big shift. And we're going to cover this in our next demo. It's going to show how we create these users in SCVMM. Talking more about roles, when you create a user, you have to decide which of those top-level categories of user it is. Is it a delegated admin or is it a self-service user? But you can also create an infinite number of custom roles after you create the user. You can come back into the SCVMM interface, dynamically change the permissions. I wanted to point out two of these. One is called share, one is called receive. These are kind of cool. If you grant a user the share permission and another user the receive permission, completely within a self-contained tenant environment, it lets one individual upload images, ISO files, drivers, VHDs into the self-service library, and then it lets other users of that same delegated cloud that have the receive permission then access those. And so it's sort of like a sub-sub-administrator, and all of this is making it easy. It's making it easy on the administrators by reducing the friction. It's making it easy on the consumers to get their work done without having to go through a lot of red tape. We talked about how important quotas are. Those of you that have used, that are familiar with Windows Azure, if you want to spin up virtual machines infrastructure-wise, you're initially limited to 20. You know, if you as an ordinary citizen go and you subscribe to Azure, you can create 20 cores right away. You'll start getting billed for them, but nobody will stop you. But if you try and create 50, Azure's going to say no, you can only create 20. And you can interface with the Azure team, you can get your quota increased to some level up to a certain point when then Azure is going to direct you to dedicated resources that your requirements exceed that which can be provided for in the pooled quota-based system. So just as we can come back in and we can change the roles, we can come back in and change the quotas. And in this slide I wanted to highlight there's a ability to set quotas for a complete cloud, and then an ability to assign sub-quotas to each member of a user role assigned to that cloud. So many levels of protection. You know, I can't emphasize how important it is to plan your quota management.
So that is so the greedy user doesn't take all the resources in the cloud and say you can only...
Greedy user, I haven't used that word before. ambitious, maybe it's the ambitious or greedy user that makes more than they should, but it also it catches the runaway processes, you know, automated process that might automatically try and create 1,000 machines at once. We need to protect against that. So now I'm going to do my next demo, and I'm going to show how we delegate that access to our tenant. Now we're going to get into the service provider foundation pieces. When we look in the VMM interface, we're shifting now to the VMs and services pane. You'll see similarly that there was in the fabric pane. We have top level items representing the compute, the storage, and the network. We've added two concepts: the clouds and tenants. Cloud is an administrative entity, a tenant is a person, and a job that VMM has to do that we're about to step through is how do we associate a tenant with a cloud and give them the access to just what they need and to do just what they need within that cloud. In the SCVMM interface, I can right-click and I can choose make a new user role, and in this manner I'm going to be tying user role access to Active Directory. But that's not what Anders and I are showing you today. We're showing you how you can work outside Active Directory or not have a dependence on Active Directory in order to provide these services to your customers. So we're going to use Service Provider Foundation. When you install Service Provider Foundation in a customer environment, it installs a website and several services. What is Service Provider Foundation? We're going to cover that in more detail. But these users, if we look at these tenants, you'll see two of them have a simple name and two of them have a longer name. That's because these tenants were created by different sources. The ones that have a simple name, they were created by Service Provider Foundation. The ones with the longer names were created by the Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. When I look at a cloud, I wanted to, let me have an empty cloud. I'm going to delete it. I'll make a new one. And I'll show you how we can assign permissions to a cloud. So I'll go create cloud. I'll just call this empty cloud. If you're creating an empty cloud, the very minimum thing you have to do is apply host resources. And I can just click through the whole rest of the dialog. I don't have to assign any other information on networks, libraries, capacity. I could, but right now I just want to create an empty cloud so I can show you how we can then delegate access to that cloud. So here's the empty cloud that I just created. And there's when I right-click on it, there's a button, Assign Cloud. And when I choose Assign Cloud, I can pick from those various tenants, whether they were created locally in VMM or whether they were created programmatically by Service Provider Foundation or through the Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. I mentioned I was going to talk about Service Provider Foundation. I need to cover that now so you can see and appreciate how those tenants were created. Microsoft released with System Center 2012 Service Pack 1 a new component, a new technology called Service Provider Foundation. It is a web-based service that allows for consuming resources across the internet or in other situations. You can also use it internally. But it was provided primarily as a glue between System Center components that are not in the same administrative domain. In this slide, in the lower right-hand corner, we have our fabric stamps. A stamp is an administrative unit, a logical unit that is part of the Service Provider Foundation. Similar to cloud, it's an administrative component we can act against. Generally, there is one VMM server. There's a one-to-one relationship between a VMM server and a stamp. So in this slide, we have multiple stamps, multiple VMM servers. This is a big hoster. They've got maybe 400 or 500 hosts in each stamp. Service Provider Foundation is providing aggregation of the resources in the stamp. So I want to treat all of my tenants as a group. I want to treat all of my networks as a group. And so Service Provider Foundation creates collections of these objects, which I can then act against. Service Provider Foundation gives me programmatic access to automate processes. Automation is what it's all about. And how does it physically work? I'll be showing you this in a second. It's an API. It's a web service. OData is the name of the protocol. OData, Microsoft did not invent OData. It's an industry standard protocol. It's used by IBM WebSphere. It's used by SharePoint 2010. SAP uses it in several of their products. It's a standard way to send and receive information across the internet, to have conversations over the internet that are authenticated. REST, R-E-S-T, is a standard way of writing web interfaces. So you'll sometimes hear Service Provider Foundation called a RESTful interface. That means it was written to the standards of the REST definition, which is another. So there's basically two standards at work, which is OData and REST. And they create an API which is accessed via SSL and provides access from tenants to the services that are published. You'll notice each tenant in this slide, there are two different tenants depicted. Each one has a certificate. Certificates are how Service Provider Foundation authenticates the user, and I'll show you exactly how that works in the demo. And one last thing, notice in the upper right-hand corner, ways to access this. These services, presently, there are two ways we're going to show you today, App Controller or Windows Azure Services or Windows Server. Both products are going to reach out over SSL and actually make the work happen using the Service Provider Foundation. So matching the personas against the tasks that we're going to do. Myself, as a service provider admin, I need to create stamps, cloud servers, and templates. These are the administrative entities that I need to set up to get ready to be a hoster. I have to create user roles. I have to make sure that Anders is allowed to come in. I need to create a tenant role and assign him to cloud plans that will allow him to spin up resources. Then we have two personas at the customer or at the tenant or within the business unit. One we talked about, the tenant admin, sort of the lead representative within the business unit, and then we have the self-service user, who's the object of the reason we've done all of this, so that user is empowered to create and use their own VMs and services. Excellent. Now, shifting back to the environment, we're going to take a look at Service Provider Foundation in more detail. I told you I'd show you what it actually looks like. This is a machine. I took a look at this earlier. When the Service Provider Foundation install bits are on the Orchestrator software distribution. So System Center 2012 SP1 Orchestrator, one of the, when you install the setup screen, there's an option to install Service Provider Foundation. When you install Service Provider Foundation on a server, it creates a database. It needs a SQL database. And it creates a website with a couple of virtual directories. In the initial release of Service Provider Foundation, it's all focused on virtual machines. And so we expose the VMM module. And then we have an admin module that's exposed. What do these look like in a web browser? This is what OData looks like at the raw level. I mentioned one of the things that OData does is it creates collections and then puts objects behind the collections. And you can see when we ask Service Provider Foundation, tell me about you, he says, well, I have these collections, tenants, roles, servers, stamps. These are all SPF concepts. If we do the same OData query against SCVMM, you can see we get a completely different list of collections. These are the kind of actions that apply to a virtual machine manager. And you can imagine if you put another Microsoft product, for example, Orchestrator, behind this, there would be all different commands involving runbooks and other such things. So this is a technology that's going to grow. SPF looks like that in the browser. How do you use it? There's not a UI. What you get is you get a PowerShell instance, and I'm going to show you how you just walk you through SPF a little bit using PowerShell. I don't know about you guys. A lot of times when I'm working with PowerShell, I don't know the exact name of the module that I need to work with, so I start out with a list of the list available modules, and we can see that SPF admin is the name of the module that we need to work against. So if I want to learn more about how do I use SPF, what are the things available to me, I can use the get command with the module name, and then this lists the actual functionalities available with SPF. So you can see, I mentioned it, it's a web-based service where you can get information, you can set information, you can delete information. So these are all the commands to do that in the context of Service Provider Foundation. I mentioned that SPF has a SQL database. So there's a command right there, get the connection string. And you can see that we have a SQL connection using a database. The default name is SCSFPDB. And it's not a high usage database, but it's required to be there to install SPF. So how do we prepare SPF to let a tenant use it? I'm using the get help command to show what is the construction of the new stamp commandlet. And you can see under the syntax, I'm going to generally use this with the server switch. I'm going to assign an SCVM server to a stamp. In this environment, I want to see how many stamps I have. And again, there's no UI with this. So for the only way that I can interact with SPF other than writing my own interface for it is with PowerShell. I can see in this environment I've defined one stamp. The name of the stamp is Journey Stamp. Now I'm using a commandlet in PowerShell to list the tenants. Now I could get the tenant names out of SCVMM. Remember they were listed there. Anders's name is Contoso. But in order for us to complete this connection, Anders needs to know a URI, a connection string, which is, I'll show you what it looks like in a second, and the key piece of information on that string is his user ID, basically the GUID, his fingerprint, his identity from the SPF point of view. The name Contoso can be anything. The name is not important. It's this GUID. So I've listed all my tenants, and I've verified the one that I want to get more information on, the one that is particularly related to Anders' company. So I'll run this piece of PowerShell, and it's gonna put that GUID on one line, one nice line where I can copy it out. And you can see here I've highlighted at the bottom of my notepad a connection string. And this is what the service provider is going to provide the customer in the SPF solution. And Anders is going to open his app controller. He's going to put this URL in there. He is going to have provided me with a copy of the public key associated with his environment. He's going to have the private key. And so the combination of me associating his public key with this GUID and then him coming in over the internet asking for this GUID and having the private certificate, that completes the authenticated connection in the service provider environment.
Okay. Anders? So thank you very much for that. So now we had actually configured everything. So now I'm left here, I'm the Contoso, and I'm buying this extra capacity out in town, out with ClearPoint, where I can now start expanding the resources that I have as a whole. And to do that, I use App Control. So many of you are probably thinking, those of you that doesn't know about App Control, how many of you have used App Control in the previous version? Any hands? That's a very few hands, and that's a good sign, because I guess that's the reason why you're here. So this goes right back to what Brad talked about in the keynote, by having a consistent experience across the clouds that you're working with, no matter where they are. And that's exactly what we want to illustrate here, where I can connect App Controller to my private cloud. I can connect it to a service provider out somewhere that I'm subscribed to, or I can go up to the public cloud up in Azure. What App Controller can do is to connect you to all those three areas and then let you have a common experience across those. So by doing that, you can manage the computers or the workloads that you have inside these clouds, not having to think about where they are. So it's a common experience where you log in with your one identity, and based on what rights you have been given by the different administrators, both in Azure and at the service provider and locally, you would get represented what you can do within those constraints. So it's one tool to rule all your clouds. So the way we see that is kind of here, where we see we have a private infrastructure where I run my traditional data center with all the stuff I have in there today. I have that on-premise. I have an instance of Virtual Machine Manager running there. Underneath of that, on the Virtual Machine Manager, I have Hyper-V. I can have VMware. I can have SenServer if you want to control that. That is totally transparent to the user that logs into the portal. I don't really need to care about that. The same really goes on with the hoster, that is the private cloud or the shared cloud, where I can log in here via Service Provider Foundation, and I get the similar access, and really what's running underneath is the exact same thing as I have in my own data center, but I can't see that, and I don't really care. I just need to get access to the actual resources. And then lastly, we have the public cloud, where I can see Windows Azure, where I can also subscribe and provision virtual machines into there. So what I'm really doing here is I'm describing all the clouds that I have. Give me a full view of all those clouds, and then give me an interface where I can access those clouds, and I don't have to think about where they are. I just want to carry out my function. That's essentially what App Control is all about. So what we can do here, especially in SP1, we can do deployment of virtual machines across these clouds, no matter where they are. But we can also go in and stop and start and do remote desktop, and we can scale them and upgrade them and so on, just like you know it from Virtual Machine Manager, but this gives you a web interface where you can go to the different areas that you control of those cloud services. Then as a new thing is also that you can do via migration. So does any of you have thought about how is it that I take a VHD and move that VHD from my own data center up into Azure? App Controller is the way to do it. And for those of you that are interested in that, I'm going to publish a blog post where I'm going to give you step-by-step guidance on how to do that. So watch out for the cloud that Brad talked about in his keynote, building clouds. And there we will do a I will do a blog post where I explain exactly how you can do that. So think about this. You're in the middle, and you're looking around with all the resources that are available to you. You have your on-premise. You have your disaster recovery site. You have Windows Azure. You have a hosted site. You're in the middle with all the control, with the App Controller console, and you can connect to all these different areas. From one console, control them all. So with that, I just want to give you a quick demo on how we can actually do that. Can I get you to flip it over to number 10? Just try that one more time here. There we go. So here is the console. So App Controller is running inside a web console. And that's the one we can see right here. So I provided a administrator or a user here. This is the administrator and a password. So I log in here. So now it's going to log me into the App Controller portal itself. So now it's authenticating me against what I have access to. And here I get a quick overview of all the different resources that I have. So here you can see all the resources that I have within my private cloud. Over here you can see what I have access to in Windows Azure. And over here you can actually see that I'm subscribing to two hosted clouds as it is right now. But I don't really have to care about it. What I'm seeing here is really what I'm subscribing to. So that's kind of my subscribing overview. And down here you can see my current consumption for either cloud. If I click down and say, how is that even possible? We saw all the things that John configured here. I can click down here on settings, and we would actually see, let me just click one time here, that if I go into, I have two types of things that I can do under settings. I have connections, and I have subscriptions. So just to be clear about that, connections is where I connect to all the VMM instances that I have. Subscription is when I connect to Windows Azure. And here you can see the one that I already created here. I cheated a little bit because we wanted to make sure that it was actually up and running. Sometimes it takes a little time to negotiate and get some of that stuff up. We don't have time for that here, but I'm going to show you what we did to get it up and running. So if I click on this one called ClearPoint Hoster, I can see in under the properties here, I see a window here where I specify the name of the connection. But down here you can see that service location that John showed us before in SPF. If I take that service connection that you see right here with the ID that John also talked about, I cut and paste that in here, and then on top of that, I have sent John a certificate. And I have a matching certificate on my side as well. So here I can go in and browse for that certificate that you see right here, and I give the password for it. And then it will contact SPF at ClearPoint and say, hey, is this a certificate that you want to play with? And it will just verify to say, yeah, this is something that I know about. I was going to let you in under the roles and constraints that John has described when I signed up. So this is really how I connect. Just to give you an idea of how this is the same experience across, it looks very similar when I go in and I check my subscription to Azure, you can see the exact same thing. I have my ID, I have my management certificate, I have my password. The way you connect to those two worlds is exactly the same. So once you have connected to one of them, you know exactly how to go and do it for the other guy. So that is very similar experience across. Now, to give you a little idea about how is it that I have this experience about working across different clouds or both my own cloud, what is out at a hoster, and what is up in Azure, what you see right here is a complete view of all the clouds that I can work with. If I click on the first one here, you can see this is the one that I signed up with ClearPoint, where I can connect, I can deploy, I can do different things up here. But down here you can see, but it's the same experience that I see if I select a cloud that is on-premise in my own data center. I don't really care, I just need to select a cloud, and then think about the action that I want to perform. Just to see you, give you an example here. Here I can go in, I can click on deploy. So what we see here is that it already connected to the reference cloud that is the one that John had created at his in his data center. And in here I can go in and select templates. So John has provided me with a bunch of templates. Right now it's only one. I select this template right here, and now I can go in and configure this virtual machine. So here I just call it MMS 1234. And it's the same thing I'm going to do for the computer name. And this is really all that I need to provide in order to provision this virtual machine. I can click OK here, and it will then come up with a complete overview and see this is what you're calling it, this is the cloud you're putting me into, and this is the network that we're going to connect it to, and I can click deploy right here. What will happen now is that App Controller would then, via SPF, shout into your data center saying, hey, I want to provision a VM based on the input that I just gave. Could you please start doing that and put it into the cloud that I just specified? I don't have to think about all the commands that John just talked about inside SPF. App Controller would do all that for me. So it does all the magic and sends those commands to that REST API that John just talked about. So to give you other insights into this, you can see here that I can also select services. So I can see a complete view of all the services that I'm running in the different clouds that I'm subscribed to. So those are right here. And as you can see here, I can deploy new ones, but I can also stop and start them. I can resume them. So I have this control. And you can see this one here is running in my own data center, but this guy here is running up in Windows Azure. I don't care. It's the same actions that I can perform no matter what cloud I'm working with. Virtual machines is really the same. So just like you can work with any virtual machine that you know around, you will just see a complete view here of all the virtual machines that I have across all my clouds, both on-premise in your data center and up in Windows Azure. Again, I don't have to think about it. I just need to think about the action that I want to perform. And this is also a way that you talked about to say, how is it that I can share these things that I have in my data center and I have created this perfect image that I want to put up in your data center? Or if I have another perfect image that I want to put up in Azure, I can build all that on-premise. And in here in the library, you can see here that I have my shares. I have my different connections. I can just minimize this guy right here, where I can then move different VHDs and templates and so on between these different clouds. So if you've worked on some image to say, Anders, I give you out of the box, I give you access to these templates, but I can create my own template and put it up there, both in Azure, but also in your data center. And that's why I can have a consistent experience with what I'm doing on-premise, move that to my service provider, but also move it up in Azure. So do it one place and do it right, and then move that experience to the other places where you're subscribed to. So with that, I just want to give it back to John. We're going to see that VMM a little later, right?
Yes, it should be generating. We'll be checking on it.
So let's jump back to the presentation. I just want to talk a little bit about ChartSpec before we jump over to your stuff. So the other thing we talked about that is very key for us as both as a service provider but also as a business when you kind of feel that you're ready for it. There's a distinction between chargeback and also showback. But some organizations, when they feel they're ready, they say the people that consume the services should also be the ones that are paying for the service. So what we did with Service Manager 2012 SP1 was actually to enable chargeback for the clouds that we are creating in Virtual Machine Manager. So we have Virtual Machine Manager. And Virtual Machine Manager and Operations Manager are very tightly integrated. And for those of you that have worked with System Center for a while, that is a very key thing that we are working very hard to do, is to integrate all the components end-to-end. And ChargeSpec here is a very good example for how we have fully integrated four components end-to-end inside the System Center suite. So we have Virtual Machine Manager here, and that's where you build your clouds, and that's where you build your templates, and that's where you provision your VMs that goes into these clouds. Now, Operations Manager knows everything that Virtual Machine Manager is doing, is monitoring for that, and knows exactly what's going on. And because they are so tightly interconnected, Operations Manager knows about all the clouds that are in there, but it also knows what virtual machines belongs to clouds that we have. And again, Operations Manager and Service Manager are very tightly integrated as well. So for instance, up here in Operations Manager, if a cloud is running out of resources, what I can then do is Operations Manager will tell me you're running out of capacity. And that goes back to what we talked about earlier about optimizing my resources. So I only allocate resources where I'm running low on capacity. I can do that by using Operations Manager. Operations Manager can then take all this knowledge and feed it to Service Manager, and then we have the Service Manager Data Warehouse where we work with that data. So what we do once it comes over into Service Manager, we create what we call price sheets. And price sheets is what allows us to define the price for a given attribute for a virtual machine. So what I can do here is to say a virtual machine costs $10 a day, and 2 gigabytes of RAM or 1 gigabyte of RAM costs $5. And then you can have another number for storage. This is something you need to agree on internally, but then you can go in and define these price sheets inside Service Manager, and you can take these price sheets and associate them to clouds. So the contract that we have and the cloud that you created for me, you can take this price sheet and say, this is what Anders should pay at the end of the month. And then you can expose this data inside a dashboard using Power Pivot or using SharePoint, where you can show, I can even go into my self-service portal, and as another side of that, I can click and see what does my dashboard look like, what have I consumed, what is the check that will be coming in that I should pay at the end of the month. And here you see another example of what it will look like in SharePoint. So really, just to capture here, John, do you just want to go over what you did here?
Yes, we have a couple of slides here at the end that roll up the what we've done as our personas. So recapping, I deployed virtual machine managers in my hoster data center fabric, and I installed virtual machine manager. I defined stamps associated with the virtual machine manager. I installed the service provider foundation in IIS on a machine in my hoster data center. I published it to the internet. I did all the commands the service provider foundation to assign the tenant to a cloud. Then Anders and I exchanged certificates. As a service provider, part of my job is to maintain a public key infrastructure that I can leverage on behalf of my tenants. But I can also let you know that the solution supports a public-provided certificate, so the customer can provide their own certificate, too, if it's a publicly trusted certificate. I've made my data center ready, I've defined the tenant, I've associated the tenant to the resources, I've got the security credentials established for the tenant. The last thing to do is to set up in motion the recurring process of capturing the consumed resources and billing the customer for it through the chargeback system.
So what I did was really that I sent my signed certificate to John that he imported, so we kind of know who's getting access to what. Then I registered with the service provider with the URL that John sent over with the ID that I showed you inside App Controller. And then I added my membership to the self-service user role where I just logged in as the administrator. But once I showed all the different clouds that I have, what I can do on top of that is start giving personas inside my own organization access by giving them credentials so they can log in, and then I can constrain them with the resources that you defined. So that's really what we did and what we showed for you here. So the last thing we just want to show, and I think we have a few minutes left, yeah, we do, is just a really quick demo of what we can expect going forward.
Thank you, Anders. We do. We have about 10 minutes left, and we'll spend four or five minutes on this, and we'll have 4 or 5 minutes for questions if we're lucky. We're starting out at the in our demo back at the virtual machine manager at the hoster, and we can see that the machine that Anders launched the creation of with his app controller is at 95% complete. It's going to finish any second. So you can see that the response is fairly timely, and this is actually a real live environment. The app controller instance, I believe, is in Redmond. And the ClearPoint host environment is in Texas.
Yeah, so what I showed when I was in the App Controller console, that server is, in fact, in the Redmond data center. And all the stuff that you showed is in Texas. So we're really doing this across multiple states.
So Windows Azure Services for Windows Server, this is the most exciting thing in our whole presentation. It's not the topic of our presentation, but this is an extremely exciting new area of Microsoft technology for us to learn about and use. Microsoft has learned a lot of lessons running Azure, and fundamentally the thought process is if Microsoft can run Azure at vast scale and very efficiently, you as a large or medium enterprise or you as a hoster, if you run your enterprise with the same efficiency that Microsoft runs Azure, you're going to save a lot of money and you're going to have happy employees and customers yourself. So Microsoft has packaged the software front end that they use to interact with Azure, and they've released it as a product called Windows Azure Services for Windows Server. There's a couple of solutions out for virtual machine, cloud, and web cloud. When you install Windows Services for Azure Server, it much like SPF, it's a bunch of web services and a couple of actual websites. There's an admin site and a tenant site. I've got those both open in browsers. This is the administration site. So this is, this may look a lot like Windows Azure, and that's the point. This is actually basically the same software that the Windows Azure Service Portal it runs on. So this is the admin site, and this is where the hoster creates plans. And this is some duplication of what was done in the VMM and the SPF. This is yet another technology to let you achieve some of the same goals. When we look at a VM plan, which is really the heart of the admin portal here in Windows Azure Services and Windows Server, This area is where we do things like assign quotas, and we assign access to templates. So this is done on the admin side. Then there's a user side. So now this is just to save time, I haven't logged out and logged back in, but this is a complete log-on experience for the user. And if you recall back, I was saying in SDVMM, these two users with the short names, they got created by SPF. These two with the long names got created programmatically by Windows Azure Services or Windows Server. So this account has already been created. We've logged in with that credential. And I'm looking at two virtual machines that have been created in my account. And I'm going to go ahead and create another one. I can push the new button, new virtual machines, quick create. I only have one plan available to select from. I have two templates available to select from. Because remember, I just showed you in the admin portal, I had allowed access to these two templates in the plan that this Windows Azure Services for Windows Server customer has signed up for. And just like you saw, basically all Anders had to do to get a computer going in the host or data center was to give it a machine name. And did you have to give him a password? I don't think you had to. You didn't have to because the password is defined in the template. In the Windows Azure Services for Windows Server, that's all I have to provide. I need to provide a password and a machine name, select the template, go. So using the app controller, it was about 5 or 6 clicks. Using Windows Azure Services or Windows Server, it was about 3 or 4 clicks.
So what we should think about here is also this is kind of where we want to go with very large enterprises and service providers, where App Controller is kind of covering small, medium, also some enterprises. So to think about where you're at. If people really love the experience in Azure, you can think about this. But App Controller is really in there to ensure that you have this cohesive experience, and it has this tight integration between these things, where App Controller can do some of the things that we cannot do in there yet. But really go out with here, and what we really want to say is that what Brad Anderson also mentioned is that we want to give you a cohesive experience once you have designed your resources inside your fabric and you're exposing that to your customers, being internal or external. You want those to go in and consume those, but also have a cohesive experience across all the clouds that they can access, not having to think about where they are, but thinking about what they want to do, and that's exactly what we mean by having this seamless way of working between all these environments. So this is more or less what we have. I mean, we have about 3 minutes left for questions. But before you ask questions, you can step up to the mic. I just want to say thank you very much for your time, and we hope that you got what you came for about Virtual Machine Manager and App Controller. We love your feedback. Please give us the feedback. Tell us what we did well, what we should improve for the next time. Any finishing up words, Jan?
No, thank you. Thank you, Anders. It was very topical, very important, and I appreciate the good turnout and the good interest.
Thank you very much.